Good evening. This is Ms. G with Telling Tales here at 104.3. And tonight's story is called Boxing Day by Richard Lane. And it's from the UK, because Boxing Day is not something we generally celebrate here exactly. But for those of you who don't know, Boxing Day is the day after Christmas, and it's where you give to the needy. The shuffling beside the bed didn't wake her. She was already awake. In fact, she'd been awake all night, waiting for him to wake up at 6 in the morning on Boxing Day. How the hell Tony managed to time it, she had no idea. Maybe he had headphones plugged into the alarm clock or something. Rebecca realized she was gripping the pillow and loosened her fist. She also made a mental note to keep her eyes closed, not screwed up like balls of bad poetry, in case Tony decided to switch the lamp on. Just stay nice and relaxed. She let her eyes roll up a little and set that half smirk on her face Tony claimed she wore when she was sleeping. Well, at least she didn't snore. There was a dim rattle of loose change as Tony slid into last night's trousers. He walked around the bed, and Rebecca resisted the urge to tense as the footsteps stopped beside her. She felt his hand brush gently through her hair, felt that mixed rush of blood and adrenaline as, no, she was suspicious, worried, angry. Now wasn't the time for base physical desires. Rebecca waited as Tony quickly went through the bathroom, and she only felt safe to move when she heard the carpet softened clump, clump, clump as Tony made a poor attempt to quietly descend the stairs. Rebecca reminded herself to tell him off for leaving his Doc Martens in the bathroom again before flinging the heavy winter covers off herself and springing into action. There wasn't much time, 5 minutes at most. She'd lost him last year at the traffic lights, though the combination of heavy snowfall and an even heavier hangover hadn't helped, and she was damned if that was going to happen again. Rub eyes, nighty off, knickers already on, sawed the bra, jeans, crumpled tank top? Of course, crumpled tank top. Who's going to see you at 4 o'clock in the morning? Quick pee, no time for a coffee. Damn, sensible shoes, and we're raring to go. By the time Tony was starting the car, Rebecca was descending the stairs, headed to the kitchen to snatch the car keys off the hooks in the cupboard. The kitchen was a mess, and not just any mess. It was that post-Christmas Day, entire family, round-for-dinner mess that was piled up in the sink like an oozing modern art representation of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. The bin was overflowing, too, and surrounded by a wall of empty bottles of beer and wine, though not as many as last year, because Rebecca had kept her Christmas consumption to a minimum. Tony always made sure she was too drunk to get up before noon on Boxing Day morning. Not this time, baby. Today we find out where you go every year. Rebecca swiped the keys off the hook, went to the front door, unlocked it, and peered outside. Once assured he was gone, she opened it fully. There was snow, but unlike last year, it was all on the ground. The sky was cloudless, the stars all present and correct. Tony had taken the Jeep, leaving her with the pokey little Ford Fiesta she loved and hated. Loved in summer, hated in winter. Rebecca knew he would take the Jeep, but knowing that didn't make her job any easier. It was 4 years since she found out that Tony disappeared for 6 hours every year on Boxing Day. At first, she had dismissed it as connected with her anniversary. It was, after all, the very same day. Not an official anniversary, of course, because so far Tony had failed to get his finger out, even though they had been partners for 7 years. It was only the second year, when Tony returned empty-handed for the second time, that Rebecca began to suspect something strange. Last year, she'd lost him at the lights. This time, she was going all the way. Even with the cessation of the snowfall, the roads were hardly suited to the design of the Fiesta, and the little black hatchback slid and swerved like a drunk on a dance floor as Rebecca focused on the glittering, frost-glazed tarmac ahead of her. The road Rebecca was following weaved through the little estate she and Tony lived on, connecting around 40 sizable red brick houses and bungalows that were barely a decade old. There was no sign of the Jeep as the road swept back on itself, taking Rebecca back up the hill from which she had just descended. And as the road swung to the right and out of the estate, Rebecca began to wonder whether she would have to wait another year to discover the reasons behind Tony's mysterious travels. The road ran straight now, slowly descending to the center of town, and the crossroads where the red light had cost Rebecca dear the year before. This time, however, luck was on Rebecca's side, for the lights were already red, and chugging impatiently before them was the solid green bulk of Tony's Jeep, billowing petrol fumes out toward the stars. Rebecca squealed in victory and then hunched forward, embarrassed at the surprisingly squeaky nature of her voice. Rebecca slowed the car to a crawl, keeping her distance until the light switched to green and the growling 4x4 sped off to the left. Rebecca felt the hard part was over. But following her elation came a stone wall of fatigue and a craving for coffee. Shouldn't drink so much anyway, Rebecca thought. Stains the teeth and causes water retention. What was it Tony would say? Too sleepy to remember. Oh, crap. Rebecca yanked the steering wheel left and unleashed an increasingly foul string of curses as the Jeep veered out of town and onto the motorway. The dashboard clock read 6:30, and the pink crab-like claws of dawn were just reaching over the horizon, the stars slowly and reluctantly receding into the beginnings of twilight. The motorway was thin on traffic, to be expected considering the day and time, but that didn't make Rebecca feel any better. She despised the motorway at the best of times. Right now, she was extremely tired and incredibly grumpy, and Tony had his foot down. The speedometer in the Fiesta was climbing towards 90, and Tony was still pulling away. Damn you, Tony. You're almost 40, and you think you're Lewis Bloody Hamilton, Rebecca's mind hissed. With her foot to the floor, Rebecca managed to keep the Jeep in sight. Slowly, and despite her inhibitions, Rebecca sank into a state of semi-comfort, though several times she silently wished for a pair of bulldog clips to keep her eyes open. The motorway rolled beneath her, snaking through the outskirts of town and into open and undulating fields dotted with sleeping sheep and cattle. Time began to slink by. The minutes that ticked over felt more like days torn off a calendar. Where in God's name is he going? Rebecca thought. The reply her mind gave her was maybe he wasn't going anywhere at all. Perhaps he just liked to go out for a drive while the roads were clear. Rebecca shook her head. That didn't make sense. If that was the case, why hadn't he told her? It felt like she would have stopped him. Besides, it was simply too abnormal for Tony, the paragon of pragmatics and sensibility. Though there was that one time, the first time. Hush now, Rebecca's mind whispered. Watch the road. The advice was well-timed. After an hour on the motorway, the Jeep had moved into the outside lane in preparation to finally turn off. Rebecca felt a relieved smile creeping onto her face. The road ran through a small industrial estate before returning to the misty greens of fields and hedgerows. The tarmac narrowing into a cold and winding country lane. Now away from the motorway, Rebecca could relax a little more, although the fear of running into a dry stone wall kept at least some of her mind on the road. Maybe it had something to do with Christmas itself. That made more sense. While not quite the bah humbug type, Tony had never really been one for Christmas spirit either. In all the years they had been together, Rebecca couldn't remember a single exciting thing they had done at Christmas, not even an interesting gift he had bought her, apart from yesterday's present, but only because it was particularly crap. A jumper, baby blue. Tony knew she hated baby blue. Red, that was her color. Scarlet, blood, fire, and lust. Baby blue was baby boring. Baby bastard, Rebecca said, attempting a serious face but ending up in a fit of giggles. The dry stone wall swiftly disappeared, and now all that was between road and field was a thin wire fence. It was nearing 8, and the sun had a firm grip on the horizon, its rays bleeding on the flat field, bathing them in a hazy red. Fire and lust, Rebecca thought. Abruptly, the fields dipped and reared again in a gradual slope. On reaching the crest of this hillock, the first thing Rebecca saw was the spire of a church stabbing the sky, the wound from which the dawn descended. Suddenly, the embers of memory flared behind Rebecca's eyes, and she realized where Tony was going. The fields faded like the stars had an hour before, replaced with pebble-dashed cottages and taverns of whitewashed stone. It was a mid-sized village that Tony had led her to, a village which, for her, had incredible significance. The shock of their destination was only increased when they reached the T-junction at the center of the village, which was dominated by the enormity of its church, a towering, twisted stone building older than the rest of the village's houses put together. There was one car between her and the Jeep, another 4x4, which got caught at the red light. Rebecca watched as the Jeep rounded the corner and out of sight. It didn't matter. She knew exactly where it had parked. The lights went green, and she turned right, following the flank of the church. 50 yards ahead, the Jeep had parked by the pavement, and Rebecca slid into a space about 10 meters behind. She watched Tony step out of the Jeep, his back to the church. He lit a cigarette and placed it in his mouth, his stare fixed on a building straight ahead of him. Rebecca followed his gaze, knowing what he was looking at. A little restaurant with a red sign, the place where they had met on this day, 7 years ago. The memories were inescapable, a roaring inferno that engulfed Rebecca's mind. It had been her father who had found it, the little restaurant with the little red sign, the only place they could find open on Boxing Day. It was dark and dingy and stank of smoke and ale, but the food was absolutely fantastic. She had been 17 then, and every year, father or no, she had returned for a belated Christmas lunch. That is, until she had met Tony, 7 years ago at this very spot. She was alone that day, and so was he, unshaven and at least 2 stone overweight, but he was cute. Oh boy, was he cute. And it was the fact that she hadn't seen anybody as cute since she had turned 20 that drew her to him. That, and he looked lonely, lonely like a sailor, like the sun in the sky. Beep. Rebecca snorted and snapped her head back. The lack of sleep and the failure to fulfill her coffee addiction had finally taken its toll, and she had fallen face first into the Fiesta's horn. Rebecca's eyes rested on the Jeep. Tony was gone. He must have gone into the restaurant, Rebecca thought. Tap, tap, tap. Or he could be right by the window. Crap it. Rebecca didn't want to look. She suddenly found herself immensely frightened. Whatever Tony was up to, he clearly had not wanted her to find out. Now that she knew where he had been going all these years, she was terribly afraid about how he would react. A second series of knocks, slightly more determined this time, forced her to glance over. It was indeed Tony, looking much as he did when they first met, unshaven and ever so slightly overweight. The only difference was now there were flecks of gray in his dark stubble. Looking more surprised than annoyed, he motioned for Rebecca to wind the window down, which she did, a little. "Rebecca," Tony said through the small gap, "what are you doing here?" "I think the question is, what are you doing here, Tony?" Rebecca answered, forcing sturdiness into her voice. Tony sighed. It's difficult to explain." "Well, you had better start soon, mister," Rebecca snapped, seeing she had the advantage, "because from where I'm sitting, you've got a hell of a lot of explaining to do." Tony was silent for what seemed like an age. Then, nervously, he nodded. "Get out of the car and come with me." Rebecca clambered from the car and wandered alongside Tony. She almost took his hand before snapping it back. "Damn it, Tony, you puppy-eyed bugger," she said to herself. He constantly looked like he was about to cry, even when he was laughing. He virtually never did, though. Skin like titanium. There was only one time. The first time. "Don't think about it. It's not the time." They walked down the pavement a few yards until the restaurant was precisely to their right, beyond the traffic island which separated the two halves of the road, the black tarmac glistening in the cold. Then, to her amazement, they turned left through a gap in the high wall, up a small flight of stone steps and into the churchyard. Tony increased his pace, leaving Rebecca a few steps behind. She followed him along the gravel path, the pebbles falling to crunch as they were frozen together in small clumps like solid snowballs. The path ran perpendicular to the rows of gravestones, the speckled minerals embedded in the carved markers glittering like a galaxy in the clear, cold sunlight. Unlike in town, there was no snow here, and as Tony suddenly turned into the maze of tombs, the frozen icicle-like grass snapped beneath his boots, Jack Frost's fingers breaking under his bulk. Tony stopped abruptly, and Rebecca almost smashed into his broad back. "We're here," he said, pointing at the grave they had stopped by. Rebecca read the inscription. "Here lies Cassandra Wood, 1970 to 1994. Dearly loved and forever missed. May she rest in peace." "Your sister?" Rebecca suggested. "My wife," Tony answered. Rebecca knew the answer before it was whispered from Tony's mouth, but that didn't lessen the shock of it. Everything she knew about Tony was instantly thrown out of focus, a pair of thick lenses over her perfect vision. "She was my first," Tony said, "my childhood sweetheart. I used to live in this village when I was a kid. Cassandra's house was a couple down from mine, small thing, little more than a cottage, really. We were close when we were children, but it didn't become romantic until we were about 14. "Romantic," Tony laughed. "More a mixture of randy and curious, actually. As you can see, the relationship became something much more than just physical. I guess the connection was always there, and it seemed simply needed a dab with a soldering iron." "Smoldering iron," Rebecca's perplexed mind mysteriously piped. What happened?" her mouth said. She was too confused to be angry. "Well, we got married," Tony replied. "I was 19. Had a big row with my parents about it because they thought we were too young. Maybe they were right. But we'd been together for 5 years. No arguments, no other temptations, nothing. It just worked. So we got hitched and moved into that house over there." Tony pointed out across the churchyard to a small stone cottage wedged between two larger houses. "How fairy tale is that?" Tony laughed again. "Well, this time it was forced. 5 years we were married before she passed away." Tony nodded, swallowing the lump in his throat and gripping the granite of his wife's grave. "Cancer. Cervical cancer. She was diagnosed on the 23rd of December, 1994. Doctor gave her 6 months. She was dead in 3 days." "Oh, Tony," Rebecca shook her head, tears forming in her own eyes now. "Why didn't you tell me?" "The horror of it. It's one thing to watch a loved one fade away. You have time to grieve, you to say your goodbyes and prepare for the inevitable. Cassandra was ripped apart, destroyed in a matter of hours. I couldn't bear to let anyone else carry those images with them. Especially you, Rebecca. You've helped so much. Helped me out of that dark place." Images fluttered through Rebecca's mind. A photo album hurled from a mountainside. The unexplained moping during their early dates. Fleeting moments of morbidity that she thought she imagined at the time. The half-hearted Christmas presents, given in an uncomfortable and near-tangible silence. And the oddest of them all, the snapshot she had most difficulty looking at. The fumbling, almost adolescent awkwardness of their first time together. Followed by tears of what she believed was ecstasy, but were in fact released in remorse and a feeling of betrayal. "I should have told you, Rebecca, and I'm so sorry I didn't." Rebecca nodded slowly, trying and failing to meet his eyes. "What about the restaurant when we first met? Were you seeing Cassandra?" "Yes. I moved away when she died. Couldn't bear to be in that cottage anymore. There was a void, almost like there was a wall missing, and all there was to keep me company during that first winter was the scream of the wind. So I rented a flat in town, hoping a new place and job would distract me. It didn't. I kept coming back, sometimes 3-4 times a week." Tony suddenly snapped his fingers, making Rebecca jolt. 6 years went by like that. Christmases were hells, black swamps I wanted to get through as fast as possible. The millennium was a leaf in a gale, gone in an instant. Then that Boxing Day, I decided to have lunch in that restaurant, a dark and smoky place where I could fade into the background and brood. And you were there, and everything changed. "Did it?" Rebecca said, giving in to a sudden surge of fury. "Because the way I see it, you haven't changed at all. You're still just as mopey and miserable every Christmas as you were when I met you. It's one day in a year. It means nothing." "It means everything," Rebecca shrieked, thumping the heel of her shoe into the frozen grass, which cracked angrily, mirroring Rebecca's mood. "You're not over it until you're over the worst of it. You mark her death every year while our time together gets ignored. By making Cassandra's demise an anniversary, you suck all the joy out of Christmas. And it's not just one day. It's the entire holiday." Tony's jaw tightened. "You weren't there. You didn't see her wither away, hearing her laughs turn into hacking coughs, watching her become too weak to open her own presence, seeing her smile and her soul fade away. All that was left was a shell and a death mask. You can't understand the horror." Suddenly, Tony was gone. He fell to his knees, and all that remained was a shuddering tangle of tears and wails. He buried his head into Rebecca's midriff, into the fabric of her thick coat, and there was nothing she could do but hold him and allow the dark wail of grief to spill out onto the white, icy ground. Finally, when there was nothing left but gasps and wheezing, Rebecca lifted Tony's head and gently cupped his chin. "You've never done that before, have you?" "What?" Tony croaked. "Let it out." There was a long, shivering pause. "No," Tony eventually whispered. "Feels better, doesn't it?" Rebecca didn't need an answer. The soppy, simpering, puppy-eyed look Tony had always had was gone, and beneath it was a man she'd always known but never really met. The yes from Tony's lips was arbitrary. "Shall we go home, then?" Rebecca asked. Tony nodded. Rebecca smiled and fought the urge to ruffle his hair. She began to walk away before Tony called out to her. She turned to find him still on his knees. "His pants must be soaked," thought the mother in her as she strode over to him. "I thought we were going home," Rebecca said. "I forgot something," Tony said, and began to fish in his coat pocket and brought out a small dark shape. "Happy Christmas," he added, and placed in her hand a little black box. Rebecca stared at Tony, speechless. "It's been in there a while," Tony patted his coat pocket. "I guess I was just waiting for the right moment." Rebecca's jaw hung open like a door with one hinge broken. Her eyes flitted from Tony to the box, back to Tony and to the box again. In the back of her head, there was a muted, echoic whisper. "How fairy tale is that?" It was 8:30 and morning was in full swing, banishing the last of the darkness to its 12-hour prison. The churchyard was swathed in a golden glow, and amongst the glints in the grass and the glittering gravestones was a sparkle which shone greater than the rest. A shimmer of rebirth and restoration, a sputtering cinder in the depth of winter fueled to a flame, and amid the halls of the dead, two shadows kissed in the blaze of dawn. Christmas had been over for almost 9 hours, and the infinite cycle had begun anew. You just heard me read Richard Lane's Boxing Day. I hope you enjoyed that. I have a little something else for you in just a minute, and I'll be right back. This is Ms. G and Telling Tales here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And I'm back. This is Ms. Jean giving you Telling Tales here on 104.3 KTO, Juneau, Alaska. Hope you enjoyed that last story by Richard Lane, Boxing Day. And I have a little poem here from Ada Corsi called Solstice.
Shortest day, longest night, presence of winter. Let the cold touch you, let the clear, icy air caress you and heal you. Let it tell you about the power of the north. Get lost in the beauty of snow, in the empty fullness of silence. It is time for purification, for thanksgiving for your life. Let go and forgive whatever and whoever needed, and make room for something else to come. Take a little extra time for yourself, just to be. That's Solstice by Ada Corsi. Good advice. And we have time for one more little ditty, and then I have a surprise for you. This next one is called In My Next Life. In my next life, I will be a mother with two spines. The sky will not be enough to scare me. The continents will have moved together. The land may have quivered at each other's touch. Every coast cradled a border. Every border dropped its guns. I will catch every wedding bouquet, fold their petals into cranes. When I have 1,000, I will wish for a snowstorm. I will hang my heart on an icicle and wait for a wanderer to see it flicker. I will be safe by then. I will be a shelter. That is by a local poetess, Kristi Namé Eriksson. What a wonderful poem, In My Next Life. Okay, so as it is Christmas, we have to wish you Christmas. And so I have someone here who would like to say it in German.
Frohe Weihnachten.
That was Mr. X, a friend of mine. And I'd like to say Bon Natal. Merry Christmas, everyone. And hope you have a wonderful new year, but I'll be back before then. This is Ms. G bringing you Telling Tales here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Good night till next time.